This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Connor back toward the line. Pionk. Pionk walks the line. Wristed through traffic. He scores! Deflected in front by the captain, Adam Lowry. Jets win! Jets win! Jets win! In double overtime tonight! And they'll move along in the series and win it 4-3. Bring on the Dallas Stars!
Jets radio with the call. No offense, but hopefully a call we don't hear too often. No. Moving forward here, starting with game one of the Western Conference second round. It's Sean, RJ, and Bobby on 105.3 The Fan. And joining us now is the voice of the Jets, Paul Edmonds, here on DFW Sports Station. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for joining us on the fan cam as well. How are you?
Yeah, my pleasure. Good to be on with you guys. Should be a really good series.
Where's that call fall in the Paul Edmonds power rankings throughout the career?
It would be probably top five. I was part of a minor league baseball championship. And So that's, you know, always a highlight. And then there was a triple overtime game when there was the no fans in the stands a few years ago that the Jets won that would be up there as well. It would be top three to top five for sure. And you're hoping that maybe as you move along in your career and the team that you cover moves along in their series and playoff pursuit for a Stanley Cup, maybe you'll get an opportunity to top all of it with calling a Stanley Cup championship. But it was a great moment, an epic moment in the history and the annals of sports here, at least with hockey. But I think the fans have a thirst for more for sure.
So in peeking ahead, how are you looking at us versus Colorado and what would be better for the Jets?
You know, I don't know that you want to pick your poison on that one, because the Dallas Stars, it's a great building. It's a big building. It's a hard building to play in. The Jets matched up very well against the Stars. They've had some great battles over the 11 years that I've called games for the Winnipeg Jets. And yet you didn't really want Colorado either, because last year you got beat in five games by the Colorado Avalanche in the first round. After winning the first game, you dumped four in a row. So you looked at that series and said, well, if this one against St. Louis is going to go seven, we're really glad that the Dallas-Colorado series is going to go seven as well. But look, I like the matchup here, and I don't think that anybody should be prepared for anything that's going to be a short series. This will be a long one. The time change doesn't have a factor here. It's only 2 hours and 40 minutes in the air between the two cities, as much as, you know, there's a big latitude swing between the two cities as well. It's fairly easy travel. So the back and forth, it's also going to be an interesting series, because the Jets didn't have this with St. Louis. There was, at the start of the series for Winnipeg, they were the first ones to start and the last ones to end. There was multiple days off in between some of the games, and then it accelerated as it went along and you played every second day. This series will start and it will go every second day until its conclusion. So this is going to be a different challenge, at least for the Jets, because it was physical against St. Louis, no doubt. And I know this is a long answer, but there was time to have a little bit more rest in between some of those games. You're not going to get that here. And I don't see Dallas moving off of what St. Louis did to push Winnipeg to seven games. I think Dallas will be just as physical. They are star-laden as well. And the interesting part is both these two teams have two stars, one in the forward core, one on the back end, that are questionable for at least game one tomorrow night.
Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Jets, joining us here at 105 through the Fan. Do you believe in curses, and is there a President's Cup curse?
Well, there certainly is stigma about it. I mean, it started in the mid-80s, and there's only been eight teams, correct me if I'm wrong, that have gone on to win the Stanley Cup after fetching the President's Trophy, and no Canadian team has done it. Certainly, I think when you look at the last Canadian team to win the President's Trophy was Vancouver 2 years in a row, and they're still waiting for their first Stanley Cup banner. I would have believed in it more had the Jets lost in the first round to St. Louis, but now we'll just wait and see what happens here. I think that there's a reason why you can finish first. You've certainly had things go your way. You haven't run into major injuries. You're a deep club. You've had good goaltending. So we'll see what happens. But for right now, I'm not a big believer in it. But only a couple days ago, I might have been.
What do you make of the Connor Hellebuck playoff narrative that he doesn't perform in the postseason? I suppose nobody performs in the postseason the way they do in the regular season. But what do you make of the narrative that he is a regular season goalie?
You know, I think when you look at the numbers, you have to say that that accusation is fair. I mean, until he's proved himself beyond what he's done in the postseason, there are going to be people that critique it strongly and harshly. You know, he won some series back against Minnesota in 17 and 18. He was better than Pekka Rinne in 17, 18 against Nashville, but he wasn't as good and quite up to snuff against Marc-Andre Fleury and Vegas in the Western Conference Final. And since then, as I've talked about, there's been first-round exodus from the Jets when it came to outside of, with nobody in the building, to St. Louis and Vegas and Colorado. But I will say this, the numbers did not flatter him going into game number seven. There was a huge focal point on him, and he was definitely under the microscope. I know he was feeling the pressure. He did bounce back quite nicely in game number five. Game six, I mean, you could be critical of a goal here or there, and there was a goal here and there in each game in the series that some would say he should have had back. But I will say this more succinctly. When the time was nigh for him to buckle down and help the Winnipeg Jets in game seven, after he got to 3-1 in the Radetfaxa goal, Connor Hellebuck was Connor Hellebuck that has won two Vezinas already and is likely going to win his third when they make the announcements formally after the season is done, and maybe a Hart Trophy as well. He was impervious down the stretch. He made big-time saves with Colt Parayko coming right down Broadway. There was another one of Nathan Walker on a giveaway at the side of the net. He was to the front of the net. He looked very bold and big and confident at the base of the crease. He was just excellent when they needed him. And he was part of the reason why the Jets were able to have that comeback against St. Louis a couple of nights ago and ultimately win it in double overtime, because that's the Connor Hellebuck that Winnipeg needed to have at that time. So if you can make the timely save and you can play to the level of the game is dictating, I think you'll be okay. But you're absolutely right. You really can't compare postseason numbers to playoff numbers, because it is an apple and an orange.
In the spirit of that, Paul Edmonds, voice of the Jets, if you're drafting three players in this series today, what's your 1-2-3 on both sides?
Okay, well, I mean, again, if everything is relative and you're thinking about the guys that are maybe on the shelf that will play, so we'll just presume that they play. I mean, Robertson has to be one of the guys for sure for me. I think if you got Miro Heiskanen, if you got him back on the back end for Dallas, I mean, that would just be so much advantageous in terms of a couple of areas, defending, moving the puck, and then the offensive side. And then Roope Hintz, I thought, has really been able to move and guide that top line in a lot of respects. Although, 3B might be Wyatt Johnston. I've always loved that kid and the way he plays, and he's going to be a star down in Texas for a long time. So those would be my three to four guys for the Dallas Stars. For the Jets, you know, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, and then Connor Hellebuck. Josh Morrissey would be in there as a 3B as well. But I think that when you're looking at what the Jets have had as their foundation for the last many years, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, top line, tough to stop, two top scorers on the team, and then your goaltender who, you know, despite some deficiencies at times defensively for Winnipeg, and historically they've had some of those, even under different coaching staffs, Connor Hellebuck has always been the guy that's been the cure-all for them, the panacea. You can rely on him to make those saves. So he would be one of my top three guys to pick in the series that could be a difference maker for sure.
Paul, you've mentioned our injury concerns a couple of times, but what about you all's injury concerns with two big question marks?
Well, Mark Scheifele did skate on Saturday in a track suit, did not play in game number 7. He also didn't play in game number 6. He didn't travel to St. Louis. He was knocked out of the game after the first period in game 5. We'll see today. They had yesterday off, so there was no availability for the team. Today they will have an optional practice at noon Central. I do believe that most of the team will skate because of the day off yesterday. So we'll get to see if Mark Scheifele is back on the ice. The concern for me was that if he was ready to give himself a real good tug on the ice to see if he could go, he would be in full uniform, not in a tracksuit, just to saunter around and sashay around the ice to see if he could get his heart rate up and how things are going. The other part of that is I don't know about Josh Morrissey, knocked out after playing just 4 minutes in game number 7. Don't know the extent of that injury either, but that's a huge blow on the back end for the Jets. You know, the puck mover, top scoring defenseman, a guy that eats a lot of minutes. I mean, the Miro Heiskanen, frankly, of the Winnipeg Jets. So those are the two question marks. I'm sure everybody else has a bump and a bruise here and there, but guys at this time of year will find a way to play through that. But the biggest concern are Scheifele and Morrissey for the Jets going into to practice today.
Paul, Dallas struggled with Winnipeg this year. If this gets to the end of the series and Dallas is able to pull this out and kind of reverse their fortune a little bit, what do you think is going to be the narrative or the reason looking back? Is it just going to come down to Hellebuck continues to struggle, or is there going to be something else we're looking at?
Yeah, I would say more simply that Jake Ettinger outplayed Connor Hellebuck. That would be probably the narrative that you'd want to spin, because it will come down to the two goaltenders. It will come down to two really good goaltenders, and Jake is no slouch at all. We watched him for the last number of years. I think it will be the ability, certainly, of Dallas to get on the Winnipeg Jets and do exactly what St. Louis did. I mean, why would you deviate from that plan? St. Louis was 1.6 seconds away from going on and playing the Dallas Stars, right? So if you're the coaching staff and Pete DeBoer, you're looking at a lot of elements. I mean, you don't want to get out of your own structure and playing your own game. But if you're strategizing a game plan, I'm plucking, plagiarizing, stealing, whatever you want to call it, some of the elements out of that game plan that the St. Louis Blues had and trying to make an application to the Winnipeg Jets. The other thing that I think will be important in this game, guys, is going to be home ice advantage. The Jets used it with aplomb. They were 0-3 in St. Louis. They were 4-0 at home. They'll have home ice advantage here as well. We'll see what happens when it comes to a team maybe losing at home. But I like Winnipeg's chances if they can hold serve here and home and have home ice advantage and hold that through the series.
And look, your dog is already starting the home ice advantage. Yeah, we don't like that.
Somebody's at the door.
Paul Edmonds, Winnipeg play-by-play, join us here 105 through the Fan. Each team has to exploit which matchup in order to win?
Well, I think that what you want to do is you have to shut down each team's top line. And then you're going to force the more of the meat and potatoes guys, to score and be a hero here. Now, in saying that, easier said than done, because you're going to say, well, exactly who's the top line and can't this line score? If the Johnson line is going and the Duchesne line isn't, then, you know, is that okay, though? And if the Scheifele line isn't going, if he plays, is the Nemestikov line okay? There's going to be, I think, an opportunity for some heroes that don't normally find the score sheet to be able to be prevalent in this series. So you have to take away, I think, the top scorers for sure. If you can neutralize, if one team can neutralize the other top scorers on that one team, then they'll be better off. Specialty teams are going to be huge in this as well. And Winnipeg's power play got rolling along in the series late against St. Louis. Their penalty kill got better as the series went along as well. I believe St. Louis was 0 for their last 9 on the power play. So the Jets' penalty kill was excellent down the stretch. So neutralizing top scorers, defending, and then just making sure that if you have one of the specialty teams that's better than the other, that being the other team, I think you're going to find your way in a path to victory in this series.
Paul, you're the man. Thank you so much for the extra effort on camera, but don't get too excited over the next 2 weeks like you did the other night. Have a great call.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Anytime. Appreciate it.
The voice of the Winnipeg Jets, Paul Edmonds. Nice get, Pepe, on 105 through the Fan. And we have another get.
Oh, boy.
This is why you Tolo. If you talk into the mic, sometimes you got to face the feedback and fire. The agent for Quinn Ewers was listening in Below the Belt, and he wants to join the program next on Sean and RJ.
How many people want to eat a W tonight?
You know what I like about the media? They think you can just dial 1-800 and get a quarterback.
Yeah, there you go.
What a perfect clip from Parcells for this segment. It's a brand new one. 9:20 every day, it's the Red Zone. 9:20, get it, Red Zone? 20 minutes away from Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece. And what a way to have a second edition with an unscheduled guest. I always love when Bobby gets nervous. I can always tell.
Great.
When
it's
it comes to the world, because Bobby goes, this guy's a power broker, man. He's a big-time power broker in the NFL. And he was listening to Bobby's segment, Below the Belt, when we were talking about the Quinn Ewers slide in the NFL draft. And first off, getting the hotline number is impressive. I don't know how that happened. It didn't come from Bobby. But Ron Slavin is joining us live, the agent for Quinn Ewers and NFL power broker on 105 through the Fan, the home of the Dallas Cowboys. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. So I heard your guys' segment, and it's always, especially in this day and age with Twitter and everything else, people can have their opinions, but it's always a little bit out of context. So I figured I could call and give you guys a more in-depth look at, I know the quote got out there, the chicken ass quote was, everybody picked up on that, but my point was in the conversation,
yeah,
was there's 6 teams that took a guy in the first round last year, right? So those guys are all off the board. They're not taking any quarterbacks. And then the Saints and Seahawks were 2 of the teams that really liked Quinn, but I knew that they liked Tyler Shuck more. So if the Browns didn't take Shuck at 33, the Saints are going to take Shuck. And then at 92, I thought Milroe would be off the board because people wanted to move that kid to running back. But the Seahawks and Mike McDonald, he lived with Lamar Jackson for those years in Baltimore. So they went with a runner over a thrower. And then at that point, it's like, what's going on? It doesn't make sense. Because if you look at any board across the league, and I do a board every year with 300 players on it, and I usually hit about 88% of the top 100 guys, and I think I get pretty good information. So then it's like, what is happening here? Because everyone says a third or fourth round pick. So when I called some teams, some scouts around the league, yeah, does it make sense to you guys? No, it probably doesn't. But what people don't realize about Quinn Ewers is his engagement numbers, and this has nothing to do with football. It's just the world that we live in. His engagement numbers are 3rd behind Mahomes and Josh Allen when he puts out a post or he does an advertisement. And Quinn Ewers is exactly what NIL is supposed to be, not a college buying you off, which is always the misconception. Ohio State never gave Quinn any money. Texas didn't give Quinn any money. It was getting your name, image, and likeness out there and making money. Dr. Pepper, EA Sports, Uber Eats, all the companies that Quinn got deals with, because his engagement numbers are huge, because when he came out of high school, there was no bigger name in football.
True.
Ironically, the same thing that Quinn had to put up with at Texas, having Arch Manning behind him for 2 years, which became a huge distraction, which isn't really fair to the head coach or the starting quarterback, that no matter what Quinn did, 11-1 on the road as a starter in 3 years at Texas, brought a 5-17 that lost at home to Kansas within 2 years to the Big 12 championship, set a passing record in the Big 12 championship, then goes to the SEC, takes him to the SEC championship, they win that. He throws for 353 yards, and everyone was saying he didn't have a good game. There was a few missed kicks that changed the whole, you know, the whole outcome of that game. And everybody wants to say Quinn wasn't that good. Quinn wasn't this. Quinn wasn't that. All he did was win with more pressure than probably any guy in the country having that name behind him. Well, the same thing goes to the NFL. If we're going to take a guy between the fourth and the seventh round to be a backup, do we want to have to answer the question every Sunday when a team loses? Well, what about the backup?
Right.
You don't have to. We live in a real soft world these days. And if the starting quarterback is affected by that for a $1 billion company, like all these NFL teams are, I know for a fact that there is two teams that the quarterback would prefer not to have a name like Quinn behind them. And you guys, being in the state of Texas, got used to it, right? And the University of Texas, like Sark said, is probably as hard of a place to play outside of New York City for any sport as a quarterback. So we're used to it here in Texas. But the outside looking in, the other 49 states, everywhere I go, you talk about Quinn Ewers, the name is a bigger name than he ever chose to be. And like you guys said, when you watch him on Gruden, he's the most humble kid in the world.
Yeah.
But he was a great teammate. Other teams on, or other players from Texas, when they went on visits, Matthew Golden, Kelvin Banks, Baron Sorrell, all these guys, when teams said, who was your favorite teammate? Who was the leader of that team? Every single guy answered it was Quinn. Does he lead in a different way? Yeah, but it's a calm demeanor, like, I got this. Does that rub some people the wrong way? Probably. It doesn't make any sense to me because I've known the kid since he's been a 10th grader. But all he's ever done is won. He won in high school. He's won in college. And he's in a great place in the NFL now. But my comment was, one, it's a little emotional for me, too, because I've known the kid as long as I have. And I know what he's gone through. And I know, you know, you grew up your whole life and all you want to be is the University of Texas quarterback. And from the minute you're there, it's never good enough.
Yeah.
And he gets, you know, he gets trash talk day in and day out, and he brought back a program that was struggling.
Ron Slavin,
and now here we sit here today. So
Ron Slavin, the agent for Quinn Ewers, joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Ron, you know, you mentioned how the humility and things that came across in the Gruden interview that you testified to as your own experiences with him as well. Why do you think that humility in the interviews with teams didn't win out over whatever concerns they would have had about the name and whether he could have served as a backup?
Yeah, it's not him as the person as the backup. It's the name. It's not like Quinn's be like, oh, I need to play. That wasn't ever the thing. I think, there's two parts to that, because another team told me that going into a meeting saying I'm good with getting developed and being a backup year one, year two, that some people took that the wrong way. That was not saying I'm not going to compete to be the starter. That's look at the most successful quarterbacks in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's not the ones that they throw on the field, the Zach Wilsons and the Trey Lance of the world, that have failed because they get pushed on the field and they aren't ready. It's Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years. Mahomes sat. Josh Allen sat. I mean, find a championship-winning quarterback. Jalen Hurts has won a Super Bowl, who played right away. So that's the other part of it, is that he went into this thing saying, I know I need more development. I'm good with sitting. And I think some teams take that as, oh, see, he's too laid back. That's not the reality of it. It's he knows what it takes to be a championship-winning quarterback, and that's to be developed, to watch a little bit, not getting thrown in the fire. I mean, the development of quarterbacks in general in the NFL has changed so much with NFL Europe is gone. The offseason has been cut in half. If the NFL goes to 18 games, there might not be an offseason at all. You think the quarterbacks are struggling now and the defense are ahead. Wait till they go to 18 games and they take away March till July of quarterback development. These guys are going to be, you know, in Dallas working with their quarterback coach and hoping, you know, they can maybe do Zooms with their coach. I don't know what they're going to do with the teams, but it's the quarterback development thing is a big deal. And it's also the reason why the Bo Nixes of the world and the guys who are playing 5, 6, and now Shuck played 7 years, which is insane to me. Those guys are getting drafted higher, though, because, oh, we'll take a 25-year-old who we think mentally is there, but he had one good season in 7 years.
So Ron, because of that, you know, and like, do you think with NIL, it's given teams perception that the players coming in might be a little bit more entitled? And also, do you think we might see players decide, like a Quinn, you know, maybe future years, stay in school because they could get just as much money in 1 year as they would get over a 4-year contract. Like Quinn could have probably easily made $4 million last year or next year.
Yeah, 100%. This is the other misconception of Quinn, though. Quinn didn't want to go anywhere else. His entire life, he wanted to be Texas quarterback. He didn't go there because of the Tom Herman mess, but he came back pretty quick once Sark was there. And this is where the NCAA screwed this whole thing up, too. The portal dates and the way that it works, if you're in the CFP as a quarterback, it's really not doable if you win January 1st to then say, all right, I'm going to the 10th and playing Ohio State, but I'm going to go in the portal. You have to make a decision with the Miamis and Notre Dames of the world. They can't keep waiting. They need a quarterback. So Quinn wins that game in the 4th-and-13 play and does what he did against Arizona State. At that point, the discussion was never even had. Quinn didn't want to have a discussion anyway. His whole thing was, my legacy is at Texas, and I'm ready to go to the NFL. And he thinks his game translates better in the NFL, and so do I, because it's quick game stuff. The reason Quinn became the number one recruit all time is if you get the ball out of his hands quick, intermediate routes, there's not a better player when he's healthy. You watch the Michigan game. After that game, even Mel Kiper, the biggest Shador Sanders lover of all time, said, Quinn's the number one guy in the draft. Go watch that video. Him, Field Yates, everybody after Michigan. He tears his oblique, the same injury that Derek Carr and other people have missed the rest of the season with. Quinn misses 2 weeks. I mean, the kid is tough as nails. He played with a double hernia in the state championship after 4 weeks after surgery. I mean, the stuff that this guy keeps doing and he gets bashed for it is insane to me. But back to your question about the NIL stuff, 100%. These kids are going to go back to school. They can make $2-4 million playing quarterback in college. Get, you know, the number with Quinn, and when we went and looked last year, is if you have over 25 starts, over 1,600 pass attempts, all these numbers go into it of who is successful. And then guys who didn't have 25 starts, there's like 18 of them that went in the first round. And Michael Vick and Alex Smith are the only ones who had good college or good NFL careers. So you know you need to play games. You know you need to throw a lot of balls in college to be successful in the NFL. If you can continue to get paid $2-4 million, build your resume up, then go to the draft, you're going to be in a lot better position to be successful, because we know the NFL, you know, probably 15, 16 of these front offices and coaches are probably on the hot seat going into the year every year, and they fire 6 to 8 every year. So they need to push guys on the field and play, and they need a reason to keep their jobs.
Rum, was this the most surprising draft slide that you've had in your career?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was horrible. It was a bad day, yeah.
Hey, man, we really appreciate it.
And you have the relationship with the family and everything else that goes with it, right? It's a tough day. But the two teams I wanted them to go to after the 4th round was either the Cowboys or Dolphins, and I was in contact with both of them the whole time. And thankfully, the Dolphins pulled the trigger, because the offense is Sark's offense. The verbiage is reverse, but they run all the same routes. They do all the same things. We obviously know, you know, Tua's history, and then Zach Wilson hasn't had the greatest, you know, start to his career either. So he's in a good spot, and he's with a good offensive mind, and him and McDaniel and Sark run, like I said, almost the exact same offense.
Hey, man, really appreciate the time. Thank you for clarifying. You're welcome anytime, and keep killing it moving forward.
Appreciate it, guys.
Ron Slavin, NFL Power Broker. According to Bobby Belt, the agent for Quinn Ewers, after listening to Below the Belt at 840 on 105.3 The Fan.
This is what I do. I bring numbers with my segments, with my content. So you're welcome, guys.
Yeah, show everyone how you're shaking. They hold this water bottle like this as he's on his phone.
Slavin's calling. No, Slavin's calling.
That's because I haven't had Adderall. These are withdrawals. Okay, just relax.
Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece is next.
Second free throw, Holmgren. Missed it again. Rebound down to Christian Brown. You got to hurry. 8-7 seconds. Front court over to Westbrook. Left side, Gordon for the win. Yeah! 2.8 seconds left, coming back the other way. Williams from half court. Baked it, no good at the horn. And the Denver Nuggets shock the Oklahoma City Thunder in game number one. Final tonight, 121-119.
Denver radio with the call. You're fist pumping like RJ Choppy. The OKC lost.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty good call by Knockoff Coop.
The first line sounded like him.
Yeah, also, I mean, that was just a really fun game. I thought that was a heck of a pass by Westbrook. I know he gets dumped on all the time.
Did you see the Denver in-studio team going, no, 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 no?
Because they thought he was going to
They had a camera on him, and he's just freewheeling up the court. Like, no, 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 no. And then great pass.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I'm really interested to see how this series plays out. I'm a huge Nikola Jokic fan, and that was a heck of a first game.
What was that, 42-22-6?
Yeah. Yeah. OKC went from minus 900. To win the series to now just minus 300.
Wow. Well, that's a big drop. That's still a pretty heavy favorite.
It's still a heavy favorite. It's over 70%. That's a big drop.
Were you more surprised by that, or the Knicks-Celtics? Because I think it was Knicks-Celtics for me.
Same.
What a stunning collapse that was by the Celtics.
They got hammered during the regular season by Boston. Yeah. I don't know. NBA offense, it's amazing. Like, the last 5 minutes of that game, everyone just terrified, like, get it to Brunson's hands no matter what. Like, the other guys can't play at all. The guys can't shoot at all. They're not running any sets. And you see it in a lot of games. Like, here you go, just every single time. And then Tatum just jacking up. No Jaylen Brown
touches. And Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown was shooting terrible in that
game. 1 for 10.
Though. Yeah. And the one he made was in overtime, I think.
Hasn't their shooting, like, been poor the last half of the season, though? Like, they've just been.
That's a good question.
They've been trying to figure it out.
60 attempted threes. They missed
15?
45 of them. Ooh. Yes, according to my math, that's 15. Yikes. Corey, are you enjoying the NBA playoffs as much as I am?
Oh, last night was the first game of the NBA playoffs I've watched.
What?
Yeah, I've avoided most of it. I've been hurt, man. I've been hurt in my soul. So I just avoided it all. And last night I was like, all right, let's watch some hockey. And I guess the hockey game was over. And I was like, I guess let's watch some basketball then.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I was busy, man. I'm a busy man. I get asked to do things. So I sat down and watched some basketball, finished that one up. I'm actually happy for Jalen Brunson. I'm still kind of pulling for him and his. I always said whenever we stupidly let him go that I was a fan of his and I would be supporting and keep track of his career while he was in New York, so I'm happy for him.
Yeah, I missed on that one.
I'm Brunson.
Yeah. I mean, can you really think he would turn into this? The greatest player in Knicks history, according to Jay Williams?
This high. Yeah, no.
No, Dallas always, like, it felt like on his way out, everybody was downplaying him more than was fair, but I don't think anybody could have projected he was going to play this well.
What's coming up?
We do have Matt Hicks joining us at 12:20 today. We'll talk with him about everything that's going on in Boston with them right now.
Are we getting Brett Boone tomorrow? What do you think, Pepe?
Oh, we got to. Chris Young said we should have him. Okay. So we should get him.
Did you guys get him hired?
I'll text him today.
That's what I feel like happened.
Yeah, we did.
That's what I think.
It was us. They heard the interviews and they were like, this is Chris Young told us. He listened and he was like, we got to hire this guy.
I like it.
In all y'all's discussions with him, y'all felt like hitting knowledge was the thing he gave y'all the most? Insider information? What was the thing that y'all felt the discussions were best with him?
I feel like that's typically the stuff we really focused on with him was usually Texas offense. Like anything that was going on with Texas' offense, either their struggles or what they're. So, yeah, I mean, I felt like a lot of it was approach and.
And he was a fan of the Rangers before they won it.
Mm-hmm.
He was hyping. And he's a Seattle guy, so he's not going to be a homer.
No. And, like, you know, he's going to bring an approach that is not what has been around the game for years. And
what do you mean by that? I mean, I know what you mean by that, but what do you mean by that?
Swing from your colon on every pitch.
What was Bassick texting? Bassick's
texting more now. He's Peloton riding.
He's a bigger Tolo now than ever.
Tolo's more now than when he worked
for
here.
Sure. You think he misses anyone? You think he misses you guys?
Yes. Oh,
yeah. But here's what he said.
Every morning.
Here's what he said. MLB teams are realizing the new way of hitting, which has been taught for a decade plus, doesn't work. That's the launch angle swing. Swing as hard as you can on all counts, regardless if it's a two-strike count. And he says, you know, the Yankees hired Sean Casey. Seattle hired Edgar Martinez. The Rangers getting Brett Boone. People understand that what's worked for 100 years is you need to make it as simple as possible, but that's really what works. It's not these teacher man, drop your shoulder, swing like that. And, you know, the new hitting coaches have made it tough to be just a hitter. And he said, this is interesting. Battle with two strikes, that's what they want. That's what they want to teach. Battle with two strikes as opposed to just swing away. But earn your home run swing.
That line.
Find yourself to get into counts where you can kind of force the pitcher to throw your pitch in your location that you can throw out that absolute balls to the wall swing.
That's the line right there. That's what the Rangers did in 23. They forced pitchers into. I got a group one here. Zone. Yeah, and like just the way that they were, the way that they hit, they forced them. They forced pitchers to do that, and they were able to take advantage of it when it was time to get the big swing off.
You can't cover both sides of the plate, right?
Yep.
You can't cover up down.
You got to decide,
and you can't cover fast slow. Like you've got to decide. But you also don't want to be a guess hitter. That's what makes the sport so hard.
What happened to Meathead Choppy? What happened to you? This is the swinging era you should love. All or nothing.
All
right. Chicks love the long ball. Don't be talking no small ball in here now.
Small ball. That's not small ball. Okay. It's, you know what it is? It's Juan Soto against Gattis last year. He was hunting fastball. He kept fouling off the off-speed, waiting for him to elevate a fastball, and he did, and he hit it out.
Yeah, that was – I never really thought of hitting the way you just said covering certain spots of the plate until that World Series season. And then Mike was explaining how Piazza would go to the plate, and he would say, the strike zone for me is small and in right now. And once I have a strike on me, it gets up a little bit, out down a little bit, out a little bit. If I got two strikes, now I'm out further, but it starts small. Until they've forced me to go bigger and bigger with it. And that's how you, because if you're saying I'm only going to hit right here, then you're grooving something. You're going to nail it. So
it's an Ask Reddit Tuesday where we have the leftover topics unaddressed from the expressway for KNC.
Yeah, let's go through these remaining Ask Reddit. We always have a bunch of them there. It's something that Hagland also criticized us for a couple weeks ago. He's like, why do you have so many? Why weren't you able to get through all of them?
Oh.
Huh? You did. You threw that out at me. And I said, I just have backups there.
I was just kidding with you, Bobby. He makes fun of me when I don't have answers for all of them. There's like 18 of them.
Yeah. There's some things I don't think about. I've never thought about that.
How come you didn't say what
before.
I said in the break? This is super
you
fun.
Did, you
segment.
Did say you like this segment. Yes. And so I'm teasing. All right. I'm going to start with you, though, Hagee.
Okay.
What's one thing your parents told you growing up that you completely disagree with now?
My parents wouldn't let me be the lead kid because they said I got too much social engagement and that they were worried that I would be calling for
Aggie.
I'm just kidding.
RC Slocum's a bum.
Oh, you
How about
shut
that?
Your damn mouth.
What do you ever do?
Hey,
nothing
than,
exactly.
More than any of our other coaches ever did. I'm sorry, Bobby. I'm going to pull a Corey here. Will you ask me the question again?
Yeah. What's one thing your parents told you growing up that you completely disagree with now?
Oh, man, that is a good question.
See, they're making him think.
If anybody else has an answer,
Peyton,
quicker,
do you have one?
I'm sorry.
Peyton always preps his answers.
Yes, I do. It is the so. Sorry, say the question again.
That's one thing.
I do have an answer. One of the things that my mom does still to this day is she comes up with the most excuses in the world for why somebody won't be someplace. And just instead, I'm like, we're busy or we're not going to make it. Instead, she's like, well, you know, my daughter 3 weeks ago had a cold. And so I'm like, just say you're not going to be there.
Is she always late?
She is always late.
There you go. I feel I need to come up with an excuse. I think it's like that you need to go to college.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's completely.
That's completely changed now. Like, yeah. I feel like college, like there are certain
and
jobs.
Not really your parents' fault in an initial lie. It's just changed.
It's just changed. It's not their fault for sure. Yeah. Like, I don't feel that certain jobs like doctor, lawyer, you got to go to college, right? But there are some that I don't think that it's as important anymore. Also, that you got to separate lights and darks with the laundry. I completely disagree with that.
You just throw all the laundry
just throw them
in
all
together?
In there. Sarah gets so mad at me because she likes to separate whites and darks, lights and darks, whatever. But like the whites, especially
Shut
because
up, Bobby.
She doesn't want all the white clothes turn a little gray.
That is true.
And I'm like,
all my white T-shirts are a little gray because
they're
I do
a little
that.
Gray.
I throw them in. I don't care.
I throw them all in. I don't care.
I like the
but
color
she
gray.
Cares. She likes vibrance.
It wasn't anything. It wasn't anything they said. It was just
a word.
It was their general freak out over having a light bulb on. Like acting like one light bulb was going to just like drive up the electric bill $100.
Okay, I do that now.
But I've looked it up. It doesn't.
It's not that. It's setting.
I know, you're right.
It's setting a tone for the house.
Yeah.
It's a principle thing.
Yeah.
If you leave one on, my house thinks it's okay to leave 8 on. And then
and you leave the air conditioning on when everybody's gone.
My wife yesterday, she's like, why is the upstairs temp 80 degrees? Well, because nobody was upstairs for 8 hours. So it's
it's
setting a tone.
But then when you go upstairs, it takes longer to cool it.
Well, that's why if I know I'm going to go upstairs like 2 hours before, then, you know, you can go ahead and have those things Peyton's got a smart home. He'll tell you about it, Bobby.
Sometimes you just fall out of love with the person you married.
Wow.
You agree or disagree?
Disagree.
Okay. So they told you that and you disagree with it. Okay.
You know what I love? Corey is willing to make the most landmine relationship statements on in this cross talk. Yeah. He don't care.
I love both of my parents. I still love them. I just, you know, my decision is here right now. So with, not with Bobby, but
I was thinking about your wife more than your parents.
Let's sort through more childhood trauma potentially. Corey, what's something you bought as an adult because you weren't allowed to have it as a kid?
Oh man, can't say that. a swimming pool. I bought a house with a swimming pool. We were allowed to have like the little mini pool and everything, but never really. We could have a
Garland special. So,
yeah, exactly.
I get you.
So that was the one I was like, I have to get it. I love the backyard.
Lots of fireworks.
Cable
Lots
TV.
Of fireworks. Are you, ooh, cable TV.
You're a fireworks guy?
Yeah. I love fireworks.
Yeah, cable TV was the one growing up where it didn't even matter. The
same.
Yeah, that was the one that I was like, I've got to get that because it didn't even matter. Also,
we knew a guy.
A new car. My parents were just like, we're always going to buy used. Yeah. We're always going to like get something off the secondary market or whatever. Like, they never wanted to get a new car. I just, the very first time, I was like, I want to buy a new car. And then I kind of regretted it.
It's not so much buy. It's, you know, it's like, if I wanted cigarettes as a kid, I couldn't buy them. Alcohol, couldn't buy. But you know what it really is? It's the cookie before dinner. If I want a cookie before dinner now, dude, I have a cookie before dinner.
I'm perfectly, I'm right there with you with the, hey, you know, life's very short. You don't know what's going to happen. Enjoy dessert.
Or like getting fast food whenever you want.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, when you're growing up, it was a treat, like maybe once every 2 weeks.
I do kind of spike order sometimes. I'm just like, like it is something psychological probably just me going, I'm going to McDonald's right now. I don't even necessarily want it. I'm just going. I'm ordering.
Or if you want to make two stops, you're like, or I can stop somewhere else if I feel like it.
Yeah.
My mom would never.
I'm a grown ass man.
Well, did you want to get your drink from one place? Roy used to do that. Roy would know the specials to a T and be like, the fries here, and then the burger here, and then the drink there.
I do.
A lot of taxes added up. Is that a smart financial at the end of the day?
I'm not answering.
What? He did it for cost cutting.
Oh. We don't necessarily agree on all the other things, but.
Yeah. The KNC Masterpiece is next. We'll see if Brett Boone joins us tomorrow. And another guest, Brent Severin, to preview Game 1. KNC is next.